Let's just hold the silence for a second. Amen. I feel like I'm a little short behind this. Can you all see me okay? It's great to be back here again. It's such an honor to be here and be invited to share with you. I think it was about 9 years ago that I came for the first time with my grandma Barbara Thomas when she was speaking. That was really great. And then I think it was 7 years ago that Boyd and I were here. I think it was 7 because we were celebrating our first year wedding anniversary. Actually, Mike officiated our wedding. We did the high school group. It was awesome. And then, yeah, just last week, Dana Belmonte spoke at one of my home camps, Pacific Redwoods JFO, and now I'm tagging it. He tagged me in, and here I am. We joked about switching one talk so that he would speak one here and I would speak one there, just to give each other a break. But anyway. Before I even start my personal sharing, the counseling invite asked me to just say a few words about the flow of camp, sort of welcome talk, as it's called. And, as I was trying to put that together, I realized, hey, I'm officially trained CFO International, trainer. I did the training of trainers program in Peru. One of our assignments was to write a welcome talk. So I already had it prepped. Yeah, it was a CFO miracle. You know, I like to celebrate those. Like we drive, well, anyway. So, good evening. Welcome to Camps Farthest Out, CFO Camp. So each of us have been drawn here this week. I know, you know, we just saw that people have been here like 90 years, so you've probably heard this before. But I think it's good to remind ourselves. This is sort of like the grounding as we arrive from different places. So we're all here this week to learn, to go further out in our relationship with God, to be avenues of prayer for each other, and go enjoy this adventure together. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the vision for CFO and the flow of the daily schedule. For 4 years, I lived in St. Paul, Minnesota, in the very same city where Dr. Glenn Clark was a college professor. And Boyd actually taught in McAllister College 1 year, which is where Glenn Clark taught. So he was a professor and a coach during the early 1900s. He was a visionary, a man who liked to think through big problems, and a deeply spiritual being, and he believed that prayer could change the world. Glenn Clark saw many of his bright students dying in the war. That's World War I. So he asked God, what can one man do toward peace in the world? And through listening to God's answer to the question, Glenn Clark dreamed up the CFO into being. So that Glenn Clark was an athletic coach is important for understanding the vision for CFO camps. He saw camp as a training ground, place for athletes of the spirit. Hopefully you've heard that phrase before. To train to put God laws into practice in everyday life and become more effective prayers. He knew that we often don't take time out of our busy schedule to explore a deeper relationship with God. So we take this time apart as a special time to do that, to look for that closer walk with God and to build this vision of God's kingdom in the world. So the daily program that we are doing here this week is the same program that's followed in every CFO camp around the world in, I just have XX countries. So how many countries? 20-something. So this same program is in 20 countries around the world where there are CFO camps. And there's an intentional rhythm to the day, an ebb and a flow like a river or the tides of the ocean waves. Ocean is my favorite metaphor. You know, it might work for stream flows or something here. There's a time for the inward expression, for reflection, deeper experience with God, and then the outward expression, the release and the sharing of the kingdom with God of others. We begin with morning meditation, mostly silent time to turn inward, listen for God's soft, still voice, and prepare for the day. Breakfast is our first chance to turn outward with fellowship and sharing. Then singing is a transitional time. We share song out loud and prepare our hearts to listen to the speaker. Glenn Harding, an old-time CFOer, said, "If you can't sing, just open your mouth and feel the music vibrating upon your vocal cords." So this is a part of creating the unity of camp. Everyone can sing here no matter what your, you know, youth leader or youth choir director told you. The morning talk is a chance for us to take in and listen to the speaker's words about their spiritual walk. Devotion, emotion, rhythms is the outward expression of God moving through our bodies, the chance to feel that Spirit of God within us and to pray with our bodies. Creative is another silent, inward listening time. We get the opportunity to co-create with God, to listen and to process what we've learned and express that through art and writing or movement and singing, depending on what the options are. Lunch is another time of fellowship, followed by the important, very important inward rest hour. If you can't sleep, just try to rest your body and mind in a quiet way, which is what I was always taught when I was a little kid. Free time is a chance to outward play and fellowship, practice play of kingdom living and that athletes of the spirit. Prayer preparation. Do you have prayer preparation the first day or every day? Every day. And prayer groups are the heart of CFO. These are prayer laboratories. You'll hopefully get lots of different kinds of prayer and experience that closeness with God. I invite you to come with a sense of expectancy and wonder at what God will do, with awe at what God will do in your group. So after prayer groups, dinner, outward expression, followed again by the transition of singing. Evening talk is time for listening, inward expression. And afterglow is our last outward time of fellowship, and then the lights out, quiet time to end of the day. So really, I like to honor that flow because it's just a beautiful way to feel that expression. So each part of the day has its purpose and is part of the flow, so I encourage you to participate in every step to get the maximum training effect. You can't just like do weights all the time and then be an athlete. You gotta do all the different things. So just as Glenn Clark put together a training schedule of many important parts for his athletes, he presented us with a wide and varied daily training program to become athletes of the spirit. If you're uncomfortable with some parts of the program, that's okay. That just means you're stretching your muscles and you realize the benefits of training soon. One last aspect of Glenn Clark's vision is that I think it's important to highlight. He planned for CFO to be an interdenominational experience. He understood that one denomination didn't have all the answers and that there was strength and growth in our diversity. At CFO, we drop the doctrine, the preaching, and we go to the strongest common denominator, love for God and love for one another. Rather than inflate our differences, let's seek common ground, seek a deeper love, without judging and without deciding who's right and who's wrong, and instead celebrate that common love for God and our common mission to create kingdom living on earth. So I encourage you to feel the flow and remember that God has called each of us here to practice kingdom living this week. You're not here by accident. God has a divine plan for each of us, and this week we're invited to explore that plan. So you're all oriented. I had that written out, so I was reading that, but I won't be reading the whole time. Just don't get worried. Again, it's great to be here with you all and to be here with some of my California CFOers. It's really great meshing of everything. I'm just going to share this week a lot about, I tried to think, what do I actually do that's part of my spiritual walk? What are the actual practices? And so that's what I'm going to go through. And so some of it, if it's not like directly related to the Bible, just know that this is part of how I actually am expressing my love for God and love for others in the world. So today I'm going to start with talk one, the busy trap. And my prayer group little quote was the exact same quote that I have at the top of my talk. So CFO miracle number two. So be still and know that I am God, Psalm 46:10. So as I just mentioned, camp is a time apart, separate from our everyday lives. And that's a necessary space, this space from the busyness that's all around us. More and more people are beginning to realize that we create this busy trap in our culture. So I got that phrase from a New York Times article in 2012, and it just like popped up and made so much sense to me. I noticed that I was always answering people when they asked, how's it going? I would just say, oh, it's so busy. I'm so busy. And if I had any downtime, I just immediately wanted to like, okay, what am I going to do to fill that space? I'm sure I have something to do. And I'm a notorious planner and overscheduler, which Boyd will definitely tell you a story or two. In fact, when I went to that CFOI camp in Peru, it was just 4 days after we moved to Canada. So we hadn't even unpacked, and Boyd had to do all that unpacking for me. So we fill this space with busyness because in our culture, we value that busyness. People who are busy are in demand. They're being asked to do things. They're leaders. And even this concept of leaning in, which was so popular a few years ago by Sheryl Sandberg, was you can't rest for a second. You need to keep pushing ahead. Pushing. If you let up, then you're kind of letting someone else win. But for me, it was just, I was starting to feel the pressure. And so I stopped to say like, okay, what am I trying to get ahead for? What's the why? And so when I would find myself getting so busy or feeling so busy or answering that, to see, stop and reflect to see why am I pushing? Is it because I'm scared of the downtime? Am I scared of that space? Or is it just like a manic grab for more money? Am I just trying to, you know, say, oh, I need more and more and more? So whatever the reason was for that particular busy spell, for me, it's just naming the reason of why I was being so busy. And it could be that I realized that, well, I just had a lot of things going on at that point, and that these are all things that I want to be doing and valuing, and so that's okay too. But if for me, it was just knowing why all that busyness was happening. Part of the knowing the why is important is because they found that knowing our purpose is one of the things that makes us satisfied in our jobs. So when we know what we're working towards, that larger picture, then we can feel satisfied in whatever we're doing, even if it's the data entry for the Spirit in Action mailing list. Like, I know that that's the bigger picture is that I'm getting to connect with other people. And so then that can be not quite so much like just a busy rush. So part of when I started to realize I was falling into this busy trap was that I was trying to keep up with Boyd's busyness. So Boyd and I have been married almost 8 years now. So we've had a lot of time to sort of figure out how we play against each other. Of course, that's not very long compared to some people, I'm sure, in this room. But, you know, I was noticing that, you know, Boyd was working on his PhD. He was writing a book. He was being a new professor, U.S. history. So, like, he had all this stuff that was really being busy. And his why answer was that he really enjoys the work that he's doing. And for me, I had a job that didn't require as much work, but I was trying to fill up the same amount of space with working really, really, really hard. So there was a point when I started saying, like, okay, I don't need to keep pushing that hard. That's not my vision. Another aspect of this is this busy making is the concept of FOMO. Do people know about that? It's called the fear of missing out, FOMO. And actually, I was realizing last week as we were at Pack Reds at JFO that camp is a real danger zone for FOMO. You see these people once a year. It's like, what if I go to bed now? What am I going to miss? What if I like take a nap instead of like everyone's going out to get ice cream? Like, what am I missing? And so it can just be like, I'm just going to stay up for all of camp, like no sleep until I get home, which I couldn't do last week because I had to roll right into this. So I was like, okay, Tanya, you better go to bed. So that's a clear case of like, okay, that's pushing, but just from a place of fear, like, what am I missing, rather than this is really what I want to do and this is what my body can handle at this point. And camp should be a place where we can all sort of respect that space, that people are doing what they need to do for their own busyness. And in fact, one of my great, my life coach, my counselor, Hope, Far Peel, if you've heard of her, a big CFO in the West, she didn't come to my wedding because she was not feeling well that day. Or she said, you know, that's just going to be too much of a rush. And I was just like, you're not going to be there because you want to rest? But really, that was what she needed at that point to be able to continue her life. And she's now 90 and just like going strong. So I think that that's because she consistently listens to her body and is not afraid of saying, you know, I just can't make it. So that's something that I respect and try to listen to. Of course, this is also driven by Facebook. We see people who are on another vacation having parties and going to different parades. It's like everyone's being all active and this stuff. And, you know, I'm just checking my phone at home in my pajamas. It's like, should I be out doing something or should I just, you know, continue to read or something? So more interesting for me than this leaning in is the recline manifesto. Oscar Wilde said, to do nothing at all is the most difficult thing in the world. So getting out of the busy trap and joining the recline revolution doesn't just happen. You have to choose to do it. Rosa Brooks wrote this recline manifesto, which I just love. It says, it's not a call for disengaging. It's a call to recognize that all of us are best, at our best, when we have time to sleep, think, laugh, enjoy unstructured time with friends, partners, children, and even, dare I say it, get some time to ourselves. When we have those things, we're more creative, more resilient, more productive, we're better workers, better leaders, better parents, and better partners. And we're also, I'm adding, that that's the chance when we can listen and be still and know that God is there. If listen for that still, small voice. If we're rushing around, we don't have the time to hear that. And plus, it's just more fun when we don't feel like we're busy all the time, sort of being harried and running around. So Thomas Merton says, to allow oneself to get carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to many different demands, to commit to too many projects, to want to help everyone and everything is itself to succumb to the violence of our times. Frenzy destroys our inner capacity for peace. It destroys the fruitfulness of our work because it kills the root of inner wisdom, which makes work fruitful. So when we have that space, you know, we're striving for peace rather than the violence of everyday life. So my active goal became to, A, enjoy the space that's already in my life. That's just being aware, recognizing what's already there, and B, to create more space. So in that space, you know, have more time for myself and for my prayer life. Recognizing space, it's not just about, you know, not getting things done. It's not just like being lazy, but it's just turning away from that busy trap that says we have no free time or that free time is bad. You know, the free time that we do have can quickly become overly busy with multitasking. It's like, oh, well, I'm also going to be doing the dishes and like drying my hair while I paint my nails. That's not going to work. So the overplanning just means that it gets crazy. And I love this phrase, all we get in the end is crappy bits of leisure time confetti. It's just like, woo, and it sort of dissipates into the world. Part of this for me is recognizing when I'm afraid of the space. And so I'll talk more about that in one of my future talks. But that's been part of it for me, is being okay with that. So part of the process was just realizing that I have more time than most people and being okay with that. You know, I work about three-quarter time. I have no children, so that means I probably have more in common with like some retired folks around here than an average 30-year-old. But that's okay. You know, I just recognizing that I like going out to lunch with people in the middle of the week. I can take along a book and go to a cafe, take a walk in the afternoon when it's nice out, you know, 3 months in Canada when we can go outside. And I've actually found at some parties recently, talking to people with the high unemployment rate right now, especially among younger people, and also this piece together jobs that we, you know, we're doing this and we're going to do this a little bit and we're going to do these odd jobs, that like people do have a lot of time, and it's often that crappy leisure confetti time. And it's also feeling like to be productive members of society that we need to fill that time, that we need to have that 8 hours a day that we're working. And so people just get paralyzed with trying to fill it. They're like, what are you doing to fill your time? What are you doing to fill your time? Like feeling like we need to do this, because that's how we talk about, you know, being active adults. So just part of is just allowing that space. And then part of also finding the space is I notice when I'm enjoying myself. So it's like, hey, this is a full bit of leisure time. My cousin used to say, like, stop, like, I'm having so much fun. Just like stop and recognize. My little niece, Willow, who's just 2 and a half, she said, this is fun. You know, it's just like this, we're having a good time. And so that's like finding that space is, hey, it's right here. So the part B is about creating space. So for me, it's giving me time to think, saying like, if I'm stuck in something, let me go for a walk. Let's turn off the audiobook. Let me turn off my podcast. And I'm just going to like walk to the subway this time without listening to 3 things at once. Because I do have this leisure time and I like to fill it, sometimes I'll get like 5 lunch dates in a week and I'm just like, what am I doing? So I read this, just say no, never suggest lunch with people you don't want to have lunch with. Seems pretty simple. And then this is the important part for me. They will be much less disappointed than you think. This is realizing not everyone's like, gosh, I wonder when Tanya's going to ask me out again. So that's creating spaces, saying no when I don't want to do something. Amazing, I know. So another part of creating space is consciously piecing those confetti bits together so that it's a bigger, you know, piece of paper or whatever. Work hard all week and then have all of Saturday together with no phones and no agenda. Go on a date night with Boyd. Those are bits of like piecing everything else apart so that there's a bigger confetti bit. A part of it also is just realizing when I can have the space on my own. I have here, don't busy trap Boyd, because I like to plan a lot of things and he's, you know, better at having the space. And so know that it's okay to have do things separately, and that people are comfortable with different levels of busyness too. Another part of creating space is not like always thinking about the future, like what I'm going to do this and then this and then this, and what am I going to do then. And what we've started to say in our house is like, that's something for future Tanya to worry about. I don't have to worry about it right now, but like in a few days I'll worry about that. So transferring that responsibility from present time to letting it go and letting it happen in the future. Another thing that we say often in our family is, don't get caught up in other people's drama that doesn't affect me. So not my circus, not my monkey. If it's not mine to deal with, I don't need to be there in the middle of this 3-ring circus. And, you know, and if there's something that, you know, some circus that Boyd is dealing with, I can support him without having to, like, get unnecessarily emotionally involved in that. So one of the inquiries from a podcast I heard was, who would I be if I wasn't trying to prepare? If we attach in our culture so much importance to busyness, who are we if we're not being busy? And I'm still answering that, but that's just coming into myself of like, who am I when I step back? Am I still okay with that person? Usually, yeah, I like that person better. Part of creating space, the actual work of creating space and getting out of the busy trap is let go and let God. It's one of my favorite songs. I'm sure we'll sing it this week. Mike. He's on it. So I say it's a practice because it's conscious choice about getting out of the busy trap and finding ways to enjoy the space. So, yeah, part of the creating space is reducing the anxiety about time. That's the, you know, anxiety about future Tanya can deal with this. Reducing worrying, because just worrying things over and over again can create just a huge part of the wasted time that we have in our everyday lives is trying to worry about future things. A prayer for a waiting time that I have up on my desk. Give me the persistence to stay in the wilderness of unknowing until I am ready to receive your call. That's just, can I be okay in this space? Can I be okay in the wilderness of unknowing before I move into whatever's next? And that's always a great one when there's transitions going on. Another one that I found for Boyd that he has taped on his desk is, life is always unfinished business. So it says, consider our lives are always unfinished business. Imagine that the picture of our being is never complete. Allow your life to be a work in progress. And that's, again, just like taking each thing moment by moment. Don't have to have the full big picture yet. Let's just, take each step. So that life is a work in progress is really helpful when I'm getting stuck in the overwhelming. The other practice that's a very real practice is, even if I am busy, letting go of the emotional response, the emotional energy around that busyness. And I say I use this often because we don't have a car and I rely on public transportation for all my transportation needs around Toronto. So that means I spend a lot of time waiting for streetcars. Not knowing, you know, the app says it's coming in 1 minute. Why isn't it here? Like, there's nothing on the Twitter update about why it's not coming. Like, so just relaxing and going, there's nothing I can do in this moment. My dentist appointment, yes, it's in 5 minutes. There's no way to get there any faster than just to wait. And, I was like, can I take a taxi? You know, it's going to be expensive, but I'll get there. I won't get there in time. You know, should I wait for the buses? Should I try to find like someone who can give me a ride? And it's just like, there's nothing to do but just wait. And so when this happened, I just called and said, the subways are stopped. I'm not going to be there on time. And I get in and the hygienist was just, she was like, how's your day going? Come on, sit down, you know. And then she took like, I was a full like 25 minutes late. She like had a 5 minute chat, just checking in with me. And then she put me in the chair. I was like, okay, that was a lot of wasted energy that I just was worrying about getting here on time. She fully doesn't care that I'm late. So I guess that goes back to the, you know, they care less than you think. Mike had a great song that last year when we spoke at Lassen last year together, Lassen JFO, and his song was, you are meaningless. You are meaningless. Your big drama has no place in my world. You are meaningless to me. And I sometimes think about that when there's like something big that's going on and I just can't handle it. It's like, tish, boosh, get away. You have no place. So another of the actual practices is literally actually singing "Let Go and Let God Have His Wonderful Way." And I like to do the motions. You know, I can't sit in my chair and sing "Let Go and Let God." So it's, for me, that's that physical and auditory release, relax, just like get it out of my shoulders, especially if I'm at my computer, I'm trying to fix, you know, if we got a bug in the Spirit in Action website, what am I going to do about this? I don't know what I'm doing. It's like a little bit above my pay grade and I need to fix it because there's no one above me. So I was looking at my computer, probably screen for an hour straight, not even blinking. And then Boyd was like, in sort of intervention mode, like, "Tanya, you need to do let go, let God. Like, get up and like do it now." And so I did, and you know, I felt much better. So I would strongly recommend that, even, you know, in a work environment. I think it's totally appropriate. So the let go and let God is just about being in God's flow. It's about being flexible. And there's also the difference here. Like, let go doesn't mean that I'm not going to finish whatever I need to do. I'm not just saying, well, the website will take care of itself. Like, let go, but not let it go. I'll still have to deal with it, but I'll approach it from a much more relaxed position. It's not ignoring the situation. It's just turning it over to God. And that's been really helpful for me. Another part about being in that space, being in the unbusyness, being in the let go and let God is about being here now. And we talk a lot about, you know, being in the present moment. But for me, the practice became to be here now, to put the emphasis sort of on the physical presence of where I am. And that was especially important about a year ago when we live in Toronto, but a Spirit in Action, the organization I run, is based in California. So our board is all there. I go back for board meetings. We have some other projects that we do in California. That's where I grew up. But we live and have a home in Toronto. So like I was going back and forth, and then, you know, I go to other things around the world. I love to travel. That's where what I do whenever I have a free moment. But so the emphasis became on being here, wherever I was, this is where I am. And I kind of got that feeling right now, just like before I came up to speak. It's just, you know, I left Toronto 2 weeks ago. I was in in California for a week, gave some talks about Spirit in Action, had a board meeting, and then went straight to camp. I was at camp and left camp directly to go to the airport with Mike and Dana. We landed at like 1:30 last night, got his house 2:30, and then like it's like, okay, we got to sleep. Where am I? And it's like we didn't, you know, we arrived in the dark, so we didn't even get to see where we were. We just sort of flopped onto the beds. And this morning, we opened the curtains. I was like, Mike, let's check out where we are. We had gone up an elevator, one flight, to get up to Dana's house. We look out the window, and there's grass right there. It's like we're on the top. We're on the ground floor again. Yeah. It was like, I guess there's a slope. So, but like in my head, am I be here now? I was like up on the second story. And then I was like, whoa, how did we get down to the ground floor again? Trippy. Anyway, I guess that's to say that a lot of my be here now is just try to picture where I am and sort of notice what's around me. And I clearly didn't have like the tools to figure that out this morning. Like the window. Yeah, so sometimes I'll just notice, okay, where am I? This is my home. This is my condo. This is my neighborhood. This is Toronto. This is Canada. This is the North American continent. This is where I am. And then when I'm in California, it's like, okay, this is Santa Cruz. This is the bedroom where I grew up. This is my house. This is Santa Cruz. This is California. And just sort of recognizing this is where I am. There's the ocean out there in Toronto. It's like, okay, there are the cars and the streetcars. These are separate spaces. And so I can be fully in each one. in that, realizing that, you know, where I am is always on the same globe, it helps me to realize that also there's all the time going forward and back. The being here now is also about, I have all the time in the universe. That gets to the big picture pretty quickly. Like, I have all the time. There's, and if I don't, I don't know it. So I'm just going to go with what I have here. Helps me to focus on the single deadline ahead rather than thinking about all the other subsequent deadlines. Those are for Tanya, future Tanya, to figure out. And that's how I actually organize, because I run my own organization. So I have the board, and I didn't start the organization. I'll talk about that. But I'm the one doing all the tasks. And so it can quickly fill up with like, okay, do this email, do this thing, do this, figure out, oh, shoot, I didn't ever respond to that. So my practice is to put, when I think of things that I'm not doing, put it on the calendar. That means I don't have to deal with it until it comes up on the day to do it. And that's just been amazing for focusing what's right ahead of me and then thinking, okay, tomorrow I'll look at that and go, oh yeah, I'm supposed to do the blog post, which I haven't done yet for Tuesday. So I do it every Tuesday. I didn't schedule it. Ha! I might just post that I'm not posting. Another point about being here now, here, is that you only leave once. Only when I'm moving at that exact moment do I need to think about the emotional response to moving. Of course, I'm planning the movers, I'm planning, you know, where we're going to live, etc. But just a year and a half ago, we just moved across town. So we had been in Toronto for a year and a half. We found a place that we wanted to move. And so we were just moving across town. And so first I was like, just really upset about, oh, I'm not going to have that same yoga studio. I'm not going to see that grocery store lady anymore. I'm not going to like get yelled at by the Italians about the fresh mozzarella anymore. Like all these things that I knew I wanted to do in my old neighborhood. So I would notice at some point that I was just feeling really sad about the moving process. And then when I realized that, I was like, okay, yeah, you only move once. We moved like 5 times in the last 6 years, just way too much. So I have had a lot of practice at this. And the practice was don't be sad until that day comes. And of course, when the day actually came, you know, I was really excited about moving to our new place. And that's not always the case. Sometimes, you know, when we moved from Minnesota to California, we left all our Minnesota friends. That was really sad. But when I remembered, okay, my chance to cry, my chance to be really sad is that day when we're driving away. Then I'm not worried about it the entire month beforehand, you know, feeling like I'm just really depressed or anxious about it. It just was like, when that day comes, then I'll cry. And I did. And that was fine. And the night before, maybe I did a little bit too, because we had a going away party. But it's just like, when it was there, it was there. And then we're on to our next journey. That, it just occurs to me that might work, that the other end too, someone else only leaves once. That moment is, when someone else leaves, is there, and then it changes into a different relationship when they're no longer there. I haven't experienced that, so I can't talk more, but that occurs to me that relationship is on both sides. So in that moment, that sadness can be as big as it needs to be in the moment. It's just fully feeling like, wow, we're not going to live here anymore. We're not going to see these people anymore. And just sort of being, allowing that sadness. One of my favorite songs we sing at the Tahoe Autumn GFO camp is I Allow, I Surrender. I allow, I surrender. I allow, I surrender. And then it's I receive, I let go. I release, I know, love, joy, peace. And that, I just sing that song. It's like, I allow, I surrender. I'm just here now. I feel this sadness and I'll be able to move on once I receive that love, joy, and peace. And when I experienced those core emotions, those, that real sadness, that real anger, the real joy, that can lead to just more clarity. Again, that's about piecing together the space. This is about finding that stillness. When I ignore those feelings and I'm like, oh, I don't want to feel sad yet. I don't want to feel sad. I'm going to feel sad, but I don't want to feel it. Then I don't have any chance to like feel it and then just go on to that new space. So that's been important for me to like, when I feel it, and then I can move on. And again, I'll talk about that a little bit more in terms of other feelings. One of the big sadnesses, and actually this does go back to the "you only leave once," big sadnesses recently was our cat ran away a few years ago. It's actually right as I was coming back from autumn JFO camp. Boyd and I were doing crossover. He left a day before I came back. And so there was one night when neither of us were at home. That was the night that Quill ran out and couldn't get him back in. And we knew that, like, okay, we'll just have to... Again, it's like there's nothing we can do about that now. Boyd had to leave for his flight. I do not have my flight till tomorrow, so we'll just have to hope that he comes back and leave the window open, do everything we can. And he didn't. We looked around for weeks, and we were then leaving in a few weeks for coming back to California for Christmas. And so I did a lot of singing, "I Allow, I Surrender," just like processing through that loss and feeling those emotions, letting those tears go. Surrendering to that feeling of love and caring that we had with him. And we still have the other little brat, so it's okay. I only say that because I've practiced that I allow, I surrender a lot with Hazel too, the other little cat who, when we were leaving last, summer from California back to Toronto, she just sort of sauntered out the door and would not come inside to get into her carrier. So I took Boyd to the airport and I came back to California, or back to Santa Cruz, and he left and I had to stay for an extra 3 days while we tried to coax her back in. It's just like, okay. Just, I allow, I surrender, because releasing and letting going is about the only thing I can do right now if I don't want to do anything horrible. So just to sum up, in our culture, I see so much of us trying to get busy and stay busy. I think that it even happens for people right when they retire, thinking, what am I going to do with this space? What, you know, I got to fill this up. If I'm not working, how am I still valuable? And for people who are piecing together jobs, it's like, there's so much space. I think part of it is for ourselves, is finding that space, creating that space so that we have more quality time that's there for reflection, for listening, for getting those bigger, thoughts together. And then from the other side, it's just allowing people to be not busy, to allow them their space, you know, not thinking, I can't believe they're running off again to do a second camp of, you know, 2 weeks off. Like, what's their deal? It's just allowing, you know, people their own space, and celebrating that when we do have it. And then when we can't create that space, letting go of the emotions that are around this uneasiness, until we're ready to feel that emotion, then we can work through it and let go. So I'll be talking more about how I structure my life around working harmoniously with people, about the lessons that I learned with my work in Spirit in Action and our partners in Africa, and how I work for a better life around communication. about letting go of fear and moving into love, and about finding God and community. So those are some things I'll be talking about the next few days. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tanya. It's very nice. Could we all get up and join hands for the 9 o'clock prayer?